Arteta! What a strike!
Hasn't been great, but here's the good news. The Arsenal Invitational starts up this weekend. This is the Arsenal Vision Post-Match Podcast. My name's Elliot Smith. You can block me on Twitter at Yankee Gunner. That's right, the FA Cup, sometimes known as the Arsenal Invitational Tournament because we win it so damn much. It's back, and it could be argued that it is the more important of the fixtures that we have remaining in our season. We can maybe touch on that later in the pod. Thank you for being a patron. Obviously, it is hugely appreciated by Tim. You can find him on Twitter at Stobardo. Hello, Tim.
Hello there.
And by Clive, you can find him on Twitter at Clive P AFC. Hello, Clive.
Hello, hello.
I'm reliably informed it is not appreciated by Paul or Scott. I don't know why they said that, and it seems like a pretty dickish thing to say, but you know, I can only report the news. So speaking of the news, here's what we're going to do. We're going to cover the headline of the day in the world of Arsenal. Then we're going to talk about a player you might like to see come in for Sheffield, a player you might like to see drop out for Sheffield, and a quick prediction of the game. Keep these snappy since we're doing so many pods these days, and odds are you don't have time to listen to them all, let alone us have time to record them all. So the news of the day, I mean, there's really no getting around it, Clive. It's Matteo Guendouzi, and sometimes where there's smoke, there's just smoke. You know, like I imagine if you were sitting around somewhere in South Central LA when they were recording some of the great hip-hop tunes of the 90s, there might have been some smoke, right? I mean, like when Dre and Snoop were getting together, I imagine you would have come across some smoke. But sometimes you're going to come across some fire. And in this case, I don't think it's just smoke, unfortunately, because that can be a lot of fun. But in fact, there might be some fire. That's a long way to go to get to the point that Matteo Guendouzi's Arsenal future does seem to be in maybe a little bit of doubt. So quick from you, Clive. Did you enjoy the work of Dre and Snoop back in their pomp? And
I did.
Did you, as they instructed, smoke trees every day?
I don't smoke anything.
No.
But
no
trees? I do drink him.
No stems, no seeds. No. Okay, sorry.
Nothing. Okay. Nothing. Don't smoke. No good for you.
So you're more of a Nancy Reagan kind of guy. Just say no. That's it.
Yeah, exactly. I just say no to smoking. That's okay. All I'm going to say.
Good enough. Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously we could get into a larger discussion about whether you should smoke trees every day, but let's get into a discussion about Matteo Guendouzi. Do you, first of all, I mean, how serious do you think this situation is in terms of the realistic possibility that he could be off, and where do you stand on Arteta trying to rebuild the culture and Guendouzi possibly being a casualty of that?
We're 2 years into a 4-year deal for Guendouzi, so there's a moment coming, according to our executives, where we're going to start talking to him soon about a new contract. And given the fact that he's started 4 of Arteta's 13 Premier League games, he's probably a little bit edgy about signing a new contract. So certain things happen that maybe drive decisions. And I look at him, and I obviously, from a playing point of view, we spoke about it in depth the other day. He's still developing his game. He's still developing his identity in the Arsenal dressing room. A lot of that, I feel, is aligned to the French superstars at the top end of the team. And he's a young, precocious star that's on his way up in France. He doesn't seem a very patient lad. I think he's a personality footballer, but I think he's still got a way to go to work out what his superpower is. And I'm not saying that he's not a good, promising player, because he's got some sort of personality to want to own the centre of the pitch. I just think he needs to focus on the small details. So for him, it could go either way. It really could go either way. It depends on what's really happened in the background. You know, we've heard rumours of a fight at a training ground. If that's with the wrong player in the wrong way, there's scuffles, do you know what I mean? And there's scuffles that leave a mark, you know? So, and these things happen all the time, and there's a difference. We don't know the detail behind that. We've heard about this stuff in Dubai. We saw the stuff, you know, at the weekend with Brighton. I worry less about that, to be honest, unless he'd been told to behave differently. So we just got a decision coming up, and I'm pretty comfortable with this one. I'm not so comfortable with one doing a Aubameyang when he's not in the love. We've got months to go on his contract. I'm comfortable when the player's acting up. We've got 2 years to go. The football club that we love is protected. Right? So that's it. When we're unprotected, that's when I get angry. But there's loads of players out there. I can go to my YouTube and find you 5 players and do his job and do more right now.
Yeah.
Right? And so I don't want him to go, because you have this sort of vision. with a group of young players coming up together. But if he's not on board the boat, then life goes on.
Yeah, look, no players are sacred. They can all go. And at the right price, every player should be sold. If someone came in and wanted to give us £120 million for Saka, I would help him pack his bags. I mean, it's not what I want, obviously. And there's two layers to this, Clive. One is squad building. When it's your job to build a squad, you have to make smart choices. The other is fandom. When you're a fan, you don't have to build the squad. It turns out none of us have to make any decisions for Arsenal. If there is a player you really love and you don't want them to go at any price, I'm here for that. You know, I mean, I'm here for that. We arguably sold Thierry Henry a year too late. I'm still sad to see him go. You know, I mean, it's just, while it is totally right to think about squad building and want to do the smart thing, it is also totally okay as a fan to have players you like and not want them to go. If someone came in with a £300 million bid for Saka, we'd be crazy not to let him go. And if you told me I still don't want to sell him, who am I to blame you? A lot of these debates, inevitably, as you tease them out, and I've been in a lot of debates over Guendouzi on Discord and Twitter, do come down to player evaluation. If you think Guendouzi is going to be the greatest central midfielder in the history of English football, you probably shouldn't sell him for £30 million this summer. If you think he's garbage, I don't think you're going to be too worried about it. So it's impossible to disentangle what you think the right move is from how you rate the player. But Tim, I want to set one thing aside. He's going into the last 2 years. Raul gave it big about not allowing players to go into their final year. He has to re-sign this year, or he's probably got to be sold while he's got maximum value in the market. It sucks that we'd be doing it into a depressed market, but that's a separate issue. I want to set aside the issue of whether we need to sell him based on contract and you know, negotiation factors, because that, I think, is more straightforward. The harder one is how you deal with problem players. I think as fans, when we hear someone is a problem or someone has an attitude or someone did something we don't like in training or was mean to their teammate or mean to their coach, our immediate reaction is sell him, get the fucker out of here, get rid of him, get rid of him. If he doesn't buy into the culture, get rid of him. And I get that. And I do think there is an importance to culture. I also think culture is a narrative we layer over teams struggling and teams succeeding. When a team wins, they have a great culture. When a team's struggling, they have a terrible, cancerous culture. Now, sometimes that's actually true and sometimes it's narrative. But it's surely got to be the job of a coach to sometimes implement his culture and get rid of the people that don't buy in, but also sometimes get people to buy in who are tricky. If you're a school teacher and you've got a star student who's a troubled kid, you can't just kick them out of school and suspend them and you know, get them out of your classroom. Sometimes you got to get them learning and get them participating. And maybe that analogy isn't perfect, but for me, there is a fine line between getting rid of culture cancer and getting someone to come around. So as far as whether we should move Guendouzi on, not for contract reasons, but for culture reasons, where do you stand?
So I completely agree with everything you said there. And also, like, you have to manage different people differently. You can't manage everyone in exactly the same way. I've read a lot about Herbert Chapman, for example. And one of the many reasons he was so successful was because he was the first manager, really, to look at his players as a group of different human beings who have different emotional states and different personalities. Because to that point, they'd been, you know, footballers had been treated like soldiers, basically. Go out there, do that, because that's what I'm telling you to do. And I read a lot of stuff about how he managed, like, Alex James, who was the star player, and he liked a whiskey and a cigar. And, you know, Herbert Chapman let him have his whiskey and cigar because he basically said, if you play on Saturday and you play well, I don't really care what you do. And that worked. But at the same time, I think on the cultural aspect, it depends where you are as a club as to what you can tolerate and how far down the line you are. I think once the culture is set, you can have people that potentially disrupt it more. And listen, I heard what you said on the last podcast, and I kind of agree as well that, you know, being a bit of a brat doesn't necessarily mean you're not buying into the culture and you're not working hard and you don't work hard for your teammates and things like that. And the fact that he was a dick at Brighton, you know, was because he was upset that we lost, and he was upset to see his teammate injured. And you know, I don't see that as subversive to the culture. That's something I'd like to see a lot more of. But, you know, some of the stuff we're hearing about on the training ground, and it depends where you are. And I have to say, I think Arsenal are at the stage where they're at the beginning of that journey. So, you know, when you hear stuff about the Invincibles, or you hear stuff about, like, Dennis Bergkamp and Lee Dixon coming to blows and things like that, that's fine because the culture in that team is set and you know they're going to shake hands, and when they say it's forgotten, it is forgotten because that's, it's an adult culture. But when you're at the beginning of that process, you know, look, there are like, I don't necessarily, you know, that whole like fire someone in front of everyone to like stamp your authority on the, like, I don't necessarily buy into that.
Yeah.
But I do think that if you're at the beginning of that, basically, if the culture's wrong and you're at the very beginning of trying to sort it out, I think you do have to take a harder line. And again, to reach back into Arsenal's history, I'd compare that with George Graham. George Graham got rid of some brilliant footballers, like Kenny Sansom, who was, you know, the best defender in England at the time. Even like people who were considered really good pros, like Stuart Robson and Viv Anderson, and Graham Ricks. Like, he got rid of them as well, and it wasn't necessarily because he hated them all and thought they were dicks. It was just he thought something different was needed. And then once he was a little bit in and, you know, the success was there and the team was a bit more mature, he let some things slide, you know, the Tuesday club, Paul Merson turning up with a bin bag under his training gear. Mm-hmm. I just think it depends on where you are, like, in the cultural journey. And I think Arsenal are right at the start of it. So in saying this, I'm not necessarily saying I don't think that Guendouzi is, or I think he is subversive to that culture necessarily, although it sounds like from what we're hearing, he's certainly teetering on that brink. But I would have some sympathy if Arteta said, no, I'm not standing for this. And I think Clive made a good point on the last podcast as well, is that Arteta's been consistent in this. He's done this to Ozil. He's done this to Guendouzi. You know, he's done this to guys of different seniority and different levels of importance. And Maitland-Niles was the other one as well. Yep. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I kind of think that's fine as well. I think if you're... And from Arteta's point of view, he's a young coach as well, right? He's trying to find his way, and I completely understand that. He needs to change the culture, and he doesn't want to be pushed around. And one of the things I think that's been underestimated, just in closing, about the Ozil thing as well, that's difficult. Arteta and Ozil played in the same midfield for 3 years. They're teammates, they're friends. And he had no compunction about dropping him. And kicking him out, and that's difficult to do. That must have been very difficult for him to do. But you know, he's setting a baseline here, and I'm kind of I'll at this stage take his word for it if he doesn't think Guendouzi is kind of coming up to that baseline.
Yeah, that's fair. And again, I want to try to disentangle player evaluation from this, because if you don't think he's a particularly good player with a particularly high ceiling, then it would be silly to even momentarily consider keeping a guy who is a problem culturally. I think what's interesting to me, Tim, is I think there are ways you can be bad for culture. And I think one of the worst is not working hard on the pitch, not working hard on the training ground, not taking your job seriously as a professional. I don't think there's any indication that he's got that problem. I mean, he's been used. Granted, Arteta started him in 30% of games, but that's still 30% of the games he started. He started both games after Project Restart. He's played a lot of minutes. We've seen Arteta's willing to just keep people completely out of the team if they're not doing what he wants. So surely, at least at some level, he sees his talent and he sees his application. If it is a case where he's undermined Arteta to the extent that Arteta feels this guy is going to cause other players to not respect me, that's too destructive to the team. But I do want to point out, you know, people point to like what Pep did with Sané. That's easy to do when you can buy 10 Sanés. You know, I mean, we do have limited resources. And I think we're at a stage of our rebuild where if you're going to buy a kid at 18 and you see him as having a huge ceiling, selling him two seasons later because he's got a bit of an attitude problem is not the outcome you want. You'd like to row it back to a better outcome. I mean, look at Arsene Wenger. Arsene Wenger took over a team that had guys in it who liked to drink, weren't super professional, didn't necessarily want to treat their bodies the right way. He had a job on his hands to get them to come around. Some players wound up going, but a lot of the players wound up staying. And, you know, again, this is not about Mikel Arteta, because ultimately, you know, I think Arteta will make the right call here probably, but I do think as fans we are too quick to just say, oh, he was a jerk, he has to go. And, like, a club just can't afford to act that way. You have a thought on that, Tim, and then Clive. Tim, did you want to just sound like...
Yes. So I'll say quickly, you referenced Wenger there, right? The reality is where Arsenal are, you know, young talent or otherwise, they're going to have to buy some broken eggs.
That's a great point, yeah.
And Wenger bought a few, Anelka, Van Persie,
Wiltord. Van Persie's a great example, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And don't get me wrong, he bought a few who didn't either. You know, like, well, I know he didn't buy Bentner per se, but yeah, and Anelka didn't play ball in the end. He was great for a year or two and then he went.
Overmars was broken, wasn't he, Tim?
Overmars was broken. You know, I mean, for health reasons as well, Kanu, like, you, a club like Arsenal, we're going to have to speculate, basically, on people who have question marks over them one way or another. The thing I'm split on with Guendouzi, and personally, I just think, just let the contract sort it out. Let that be the lever. But the thing I'm split on is, on one hand, I think Arsenal are going to have to flip someone valuable because all of the players that are about to leave are not valuable. And we're going to have to make a fairly reluctant, unpopular, potentially unpopular sale, I think. But on the other hand, there's a part of me that thinks we can't spare good midfielders at the moment. And he's one of them. But then there's another part of me that kind of thinks, well, actually, the midfield, we've got so many similar types of midfielder at the moment. And maybe Guendouzi's too similar to Xhaka. And that's part of some of the problem as well, because that's the position I see him in personally. So I'm kind of going backwards and forwards and thinking, well, on one hand, we could really use like a good number six like that. But on the other, I'm kind of thinking, well, actually, he's not bedded in yet there anyway, so there wouldn't really be anything to miss if we moved him on now. So yeah, I think there's a lot going on here.
Yeah Clive, I'll let you back in there, sorry.
Yeah, the price is 45 million. Just think about that. The price is 45 million. We have to think about it. It's not, I said yesterday, it's not because I wanted to see it happen. It's because of our previous stupid actions. And I think there's an opportunity for a couple of players I think we could replace quite easily and we would be better for it. Liverpool sold a couple of superstar players in Suarez and Coutinho. And today they've got hangovers, right? And it shows you what you can do when you reinvest money appropriately. So My feeling is, on the cultural side of things, we're at a different state where we were back in the day when Wenger had sort of established himself as one of the two godfathers of English football. What I'm seeing is a club that's recent history has been somewhere that people have sort of felt too big to be. And I think Arteta's trying to make Arsenal a place to be again, and people that are here to recognise why they're here, how fortunate they are to be here, and what's expected of them while they are here. And I've been calling for that for a long time. When I see somebody saying those type of things to players, or intimating those type of things to players, I am all for it. Because the three of us, we're mad Arsenal fans. As far as we're concerned, there is nowhere else. Back in the day when we got those players, Tim, from various parts of Europe, there was nobody else. But now we've got a Chelsea, we've got a Man City, we've got a Tottenham. You know, Man United are still there. Liverpool have refound themselves. Leicester are on the way up. Wolves are on the way up. There are other places to go. We have to reestablish ourselves as that place, reestablish ourselves that has the right values. And people need to come to us and recognize that. And Arteta's trying to lay those laws down. We know about the non-negotiables. We don't know what they actually are. But we all agree with that approach, yeah? So if someone steps out of it demonstrably, more than one or two, three times, got to question that. Got to question it, you know? And I hope he sorts it out. Sabaya's sort it out. Mate, the Nazi's trying to sort it out. You know, Ozil, up and down. I hope he sorts it out. You know, there's many old players and big wage earners I want to see go before this kid goes. But if he doesn't, maybe it's an opportunity for us to rebuild. There's a young kid playing at RB Salzburg, a young centre-half playing at Rennes. We could use the money from Guendouzi and buy those two players, and we'd be much better for it as a squad.
Yeah, and look, I mean, I rate the kid really, really highly. And I could be dead fucking wrong about that. And I think that we are at a stage of our rebuild where buying a guy cheap in his teens who's got this kind of ceiling, we'd ideally like to make it work with him. I am not someone who thinks we should be getting rid of Guendouzi to get Thomas Partey, who's late 20s and coming off a pretty uninspiring season in Atletico Madrid, but like, whatever, fine. I mean, I think part of my issue here is if I really trusted the brain trust behind this club to use resources effectively, and they decided he's not backing Arteta, he's a problem, we're going to move him while he has value rather than re-signing him with that uncertainty hanging over him, and then we're going to really intelligently reinvest, clubs have to make those kind of calls. Trusting this club to make that call right, I think, is part of it. I think we can leave it there, but Tim, as a final point, I mean, is that sort of a fair thing to bring up in this discussion, which is that any discussion of moving on a player is inevitably linked to how you feel the club will do in trying to replace the player?
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, what I'd say is at some stage we're going to have to trust that. You know, otherwise the rebuild doesn't happen at all, and lots of players are going to leave in the next 12 to 18 months. That's just the age and contract profile of the squad. So at some stage we're going to have to put our trust in that, and you know, hope we find, you know, some Martinellis and some players like that, and you know, maybe even some Tiernis. Like there's no real question over the transfer of Kieran Tierney at this point. We don't know if it's going to work, but I think all of us can see that it's quite sound. So, you know, as much as like the agent thing is a worry, I think we have to put it in perspective and say that not every single signing is happening like that at the moment. So at some stage we're gonna have to sink or swim with that, so let's get on with it.
Yeah. All right, well, let's get on with the conversation then, since the goal of this is to keep it somewhat short, although Clive is now my mentions here, my Skype mentions, wanting to spend the money. Clive, you are not the technical director of Arsenal, is a problem. So while
if I was,
yes, please.
I'll tell you what, I would reinvest that 40 million really well. And it wouldn't be an issue. There's always players out there jumping out of bushes. Don't worry about it. He's up to him to get to the levels that we want him to be. And if he was really, really, really good, this would be a really doomy podcast. But he's still on the way up. We're not sure about him yet. And I think that's part of the issue as well. That's why there's a debate going on.
Yeah. Well, I think we can leave the debate there for now. It's going to get sorted out. There is a scenario where getting rid of Guendouzi is the right move. There is a scenario where we will massively regret it. I think the interesting thing is you look at the clubs that are supposedly interested in him. It is a reflection of how he's valued. Now, that's not always right. I mean, Barcelona bought Alex Song and Alex Leb, and we saw what happened with those. They also bought Cesc Fabregas and Thierry Henry. So, like, it is... And by the way, I'm not saying Guendouzi is either of those players. I think some coach will have to turn him into what he could be, or he will just be a massive flop somewhere. I'd like to believe Arteta could be that guy and that he could hit his ceiling for us, but maybe that's not to be. And we have so many fish to fry right now that I don't know that we can get too worked up about it. Anyway, let's talk about players we want to come in and go out. And Tim, let's start with players you'd like to see come out. If you haven't had a chance yet in the Discord to look at Giant Gunner Matt's stats review of the games, he does these stats reviews of the games. They're really fascinating, using data and pass maps and things like that and event maps to show really a granularity about how the performance took place, you know, where the passes happened, where the moves broke down, things like that. And so I definitely recommend you look at that to see some of the problems we had in terms of ball progression and build-up in the Southampton game. I think the FA Cup is a really important opportunity for us, Tim, so I would be taking this seriously in terms of the lineup. Who's someone you'd like to see come out from the lineup who maybe needs to sit?
So, who would I like to see come out and who I'd like to see come in are directly related. So I'm going to take the liberty of answering both questions in one. So, not that I would like to see Saka come out, but I think he should, because he picked up a knock in the last game. And, you know, after this and after Norwich, we've got some really, really tough games, and I'd really, really like him for those. So I'd like him to be rested and not risked. And I think he will be. And directly related to that, the player I'd like to see come in is Ozil. Because I was kind of thinking about this, and there's, you know, there's a few players I'd rotate for fitness reasons, like Bellerin, for example, holding, because David Luiz is going to be back, so that kind of sorts itself out. You can probably put Kolasinac in for Tierney, etc. And because the player I was thinking about was Ceballos, but actually when you look at it, Ceballos, I kind of feel for him in a way because we've been playing without a number 10. And I read a good piece James Benge wrote in Football London. He was looking at Ceballos' performances. And you know that stat about how Ceballos only passed into the final third three times against Southampton? When we played Newcastle in February, he passed into the final third 15 times.
Mm-hmm.
What was the difference in that game? We had Mesut Ozil playing well. And I think that is not Ceballos' only issue, but that is one of the issues, right? Is
yep.
that he's not a number 10. He needs, I think, a number 10 to feed. I think Xhaka does as well. I think Xhaka is best. You know, he's a great passer, but it's when he's punching that ball into players who are between the lines, who operate between the lines. And the reason the midfield has struggled is because we don't have enough players that operate between the lines. And the reason Saka jumps out the screen at you, it's not so much because he stands between the lines, but it's just he moves the ball with his feet. He drives from the middle third to the final third. And Arsenal have sold have lost every single player that actually does that in recent years and not replaced any of them like Iwobi, Sanchez, Chamberlain, Cazorla, Wilshere, these players who move the ball with ball at feet. They've all gone and we've replaced them with different types of player like Guendouzi and Ceballos and players who are quite similar. And so the reason Saka's really working in that role is because, you know, the best way there are three ways, right, that a good young player can come through, either because he's like Fabregas or Rooney and he's just so brilliant he has to play, an injury which gives him a run like Bellerin, for example, or because they offer something that doesn't already exist in the team. And that's why Saka is doing really well, because he offers something that nobody else does. So that said, if I want him to sit this game out to rest him up, then we have to have someone else who does that, who gets between the lines. Now, Ozil doesn't drive the ball between the lines, but he stands there. And Ramsey used to do it as well. Ramsey wasn't just running into the penalty area trying to score. He would position himself between the lines to receive it as well, you know, 25, 30 yards from goal. And that whole area has just been such a blank for us. That's a fairly long-winded answer, but it does answer basically both of your questions. So I want Saka to sit down and I want Ozil to come back, because we need that link up between midfield and attack. And if we get that, I think you see a better, let's say Guendouzi plays, you see a better Guendouzi, and you'll definitely see a better Ceballos, I think.
Yeah, okay. I like those answers. I mean, I don't love the answers. Well, I'll get to that. Clive, what about you? So that's your in and out. Why don't you just do your in and out, Clive, and then I'll do my in and out. And this is sounding a little bit suggestive. Just let you know what I'm talking about. Do your thing.
Yeah, well, Sheffield United play three at the back, so I've got a feeling we may do three at the back again. So a player I think is going to come in is going to be David Luiz. And I think he's going to play in the centre of the back three. I actually think we need to sit down a couple of players, actually, and I'm not sure how Rob Holding's feeling, and I'm not sure how Mustafi's feeling. I'm not sure how agreed Tim Saka's definitely got to sit down this game. But I'd like to see, you know, I'd like to see three blokes back there. I think I've got no problem seeing Kolasinac in the back three with Socrates one side and Luiz. That may sound a little bit quirky, you're taking a big risk there. If Mustafi plays, that's absolutely fine. I'd like to look after Holding just because of his injury record. Just look after him. Don't let him get hurt again. And so, I think David Luiz, and I think he's got a lot to prove to a lot of people. He's got his last memory of him was a 25-minute disaster, right? So it'd be interesting to see how the makeup of the mid go 3-4-3, or you know how it's going to work out. I've got a little feeling for Maitland-Niles in midfield. I think with Xhaka, I think it's a great opportunity to see that. And for me, David Luiz is definitely somebody I think is going to come in. And to come out, I think it'd be one of the Holding or Mustafi, just based on the minutes that they've played recently from a back three perspective. And I'd like to see some of the key players that we're really going to need for the Wolves and the Spurs game looked after, because those games, to me, are still important. I know no one agrees with me, but to me, they're still important. And it just, you know, if we had a Wonder Brian game, we'd be sitting in a different state of excitement right now about where we could actually be. And I just think if we can just save our legs for those league games, this season's not over for us yet.
Yeah. Well, I mean, let me ask you just quickly, Clive, do you think Arteta will see the FA Cup as more important or less important than the league right now?
He's got to look after certain players just because it's staring him in the face. And the Saka knock is one of those. He's just staring him in the face. If he was to play and got hurt, we'd all be thinking there was a sign, you didn't see it. So things like that, he's got to look after. But I think, going back to the cultural question, every game's important for him. He's trying to build a culture of winning and seriousness and details. I mean, you know, Lewis Ambrose did a great write-up of the Southampton game alongside what we spoke about. Tactically, Arteta did very well in that game. He took away a lot of their strengths, their ball over the top. He took it away, kept things tight, showed them no space. It's a very good coaching performance when you analyse that game. You know, so and we didn't control it. We just won the game. You know, so I think I'm very excited to watch him develop and how he's developing about nullifying other teams. Sheffield United have come back post-restart, maybe a little bit not quite sure what they are. And so there's an opportunity here. I just think he's going to take it game by game, Elliot. Based on what he's been saying, I'm comfortable either way. I would say that on the result. But I just want to see us get back to being a serious football team again, that somebody that people fear playing rather than relishing playing. I felt Southampton relished us. And we sorted them out. And I want to see Sheffield United fear us and other teams fear us again. And that's going to be a process that you can't afford to chuck a game during that process. You've got to be serious all the time.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you, Tim, you probably know this. You know stuff. Because I don't think we can win the FA Cup. I mean, it's not that we can't. Of course we can. We've been terrible and won the FA Cup. I mean, the year we beat City and Chelsea to win the FA Cup, City and Chelsea, I don't think we were particularly good. But if you go to the FA Cup final and lose, but the winner is a Champions League club, do you get Europa League from that? You do, right?
I think, I think so.
Or does that place go to the league places?
Do you know what? Sure. I don't actually know.
Damn it,
know.
I praised you I for knowing know. Stuff and you don't know stuff.
I think it's league.
Is it?
I do. Mm. Yeah, when you said that, I think it's league.
Because, I mean, I do think, you know, it's funny. There is a school of thought that not being in the Europa League would be good for our league season. I think it's a little short-sighted. I mean, not just economically, but we've got a lot of players right now that it would benefit us to get them minutes, right? I mean, Smith Rowe is going to come back next season, and you've got Nelson, and you've got Willock, and you've got, some of our young defenders. Nketiah, I guess you could put in this group a little bit. There are players who need minutes, and I really do think the Europa League is a great free hit early in the season to get players minutes. And without it, you know, and without Champions League, and you just have so many fewer minutes with so much higher stakes, and suddenly guys like, you know, a Willock, for example, might be a guy who's goes from getting what might be close to 1,000 minutes this season to 250 next season, and then, you know, how do you assess his development, and so on and so forth. But back to the question at hand, for me, I would take Nketiah out. I would move Saka up to the front three. I would just like to see at some point Aubameyang, Saka, and Pepe in the front three with Aubameyang through the middle. I'd really like to see that. And while I know it won't happen, I would love to see Saka come out and Guendouzi come back in. I think because Torreira is still not available for selection, right?
No.
I think
no,
he's a player we miss massively at the moment. But, I think Matt pointed this out in the stats review. Saka came in for praise in part because we won a game and, you know, his presence is something that sort of just seems to have a positive impact on our success in games. But at the same time, I think it was also massively a part of why we struggled to progress the ball centrally, although Ceballos owns some of that as well. So either Ceballos or Saka, I think, could come out for Guendouzi, and I'd just like to see him, you know, have a chance to try to break lines with someone with a front three that's maybe a little more dynamic. I don't know. I'm talking out of my ass right now, so let's leave it. This is a game that I'd like to see us win, though. The FA Cup, for me, makes this season relevant still. I think the league is a wash. So hopefully 3 points, and we'll have an instant reaction to it one way or the other. Tim is on Twitter, @Stilberto. Thanks, Tim.
My pleasure, as always.
Clive's on Twitter, @ClivEAFC. Thanks, Clive.
Thank you very much.
It's a 7 a.m. kickoff for me tomorrow. So an instant reaction, maybe a sleepy one. We'll have to see how it goes. In any event, I hope wherever you watch that it's an enjoyable day as the Arsenal Invitational picks back up. Hope you're doing well. Hope you're having a great weekend. We love you, and we'll talk to you after Arsenal 10, Sheffield.